This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Dr. Rhys Halter is our lover of the earth. Good morning, Rhys.
Good morning, Trevor.
Rhys, are there places that you would rather go in winter than you would see in summer?
Oh, I love being in the great outdoors anywhere and everywhere. And I love storms. I love putting on rain gear and just being there. I love going into the woods and hearing the wind just howl through the trees. And of course, it's probably not the smartest thing because things can come down on you, but that's a bit of a thrill seeker in me.
The ocean is amazing in winter, in that down here especially, because you get winter swells. It's great for surfing, and someone pointed out you need to be wearing a pretty damn thick wetsuit when you're out doing that. But also just sitting and looking at the ocean in winter, because there's a ruggedness about the ocean in winter in comparison to summer.
Interesting. Yeah, it just the smells and the feel. I'm looking for that seventh wave, right? That seventh big swell. Love it.
The other thing is forests in summer are different to forests in winter in that it's quite nice getting rugged up, as long as it's not too windy, and it doesn't matter if it rains a bit, but there's a lushness about forests in winter.
True. And also, they're far more pungent, and the reason is it's their defense mechanism against not only the insects, but the trees actually call in the predators that will go at the insects. So it's a really sophisticated, smelly, beautiful process in the summer, and it's heat. It's heat-driven.
And in winter, it's, how can I describe it? I like the, it sounds a bit silly. I like the way in winter when you go into forest that it's drippy. And I say drippy in a nice way. Just when it's been raining, there's just the moisture and there's just the dripping. And when you walk through, it's got a lovely feel about it in winter. You need to be rugged up, but it's got a lovely feel in winter.
Yeah, and a different smell too, Trevor. It's a night and day process, but it's the sounds, right? The sounds are all different, and everybody's speaking. We just don't really know the languages yet. We may never, but it's the soundscape is tremendous on the ocean. On the shoreline, on the forests, in the grasslands, the wetlands, they all have this incredible soundscape.
The changing faces of the places that we go to enjoy the environment and how they change through the different seasons. Because, Rhys, they have something to offer in different ways.
Absolutely, they do. And the best thing to do, I suggest, is try. Try it in each season and keep a little journal. Keep a notebook. See, record what you hear and you smell and what you feel. And you're right. I'm certain each season you'll have different entries and fond memories. And it's just a great way to lose stress. We all have too much stress. And the best way to have it melt away, get amongst nature.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, you can't sit too still in winter because it gets too cold. You've got to keep moving.
You've got to be rugged up, Chris.
Now, I have two extremes. One is the silvery light of, when you said dripping forest, it reminded me of forests in Europe at minus 15 degrees where the trees almost turn into... Oh, pardon me. I've just been walking.
That's all right. Outside?
They turn in, outside in the forest with fir trees, and you get all the icicles dripping off the branches, and there's almost no sound, and you walk in the snow, and it's eerily silent, because the birds are so cold too.
Yeah, well, they're just thinking, no, we're not going out there either.
And the other thing is the beach in Australia in summertime, when... The light is just pearly in sunrise and sunset, and in the middle it's that stark blue sky that you don't get in Europe.
That's such a beautiful observation. It's also in the desert as well. In the Australian desert, the light is phenomenal. There's that beautiful golden nature to it.
The contrast between the ochre and the stark blue.
Mm.
Yep.
Thank you, Chris. That's a really good example. I don't go in the snow often, Reese.
Well, it's good for you. Get a pair of snowshoes, get to the high country. And the other thing is you get a heck of a workout. Your heart goes and you have a bit of a sweat and you get a grin. You get the grin on.
Well, it's interesting that Chris talks about, because she was talking about, and you mentioned earlier, the different sounds that you'll get in different places and through different seasons, because spring is wonderful to get out there and enjoy the environment. We're going to talk about winter, but spring too, because that's when everyone's starting to kick up and get out.
Yeah, including me friends, the bees.
Yes. What do the bees do in winter?
Well, the bees stay away from the high country, that much we do know. The European honeybees pulse down because their colony sizes are reduced because there's not as much flowering. Though in Australia, there's such a smorgasbord of flowers, they can keep on going, and they do. It's only in the colder regions, which are so few really in Australia, that the colony really reduces. Of course, around the rest of the world, when it is wintertime, where there is snow, the colony significantly reduces, and the queen is kept warm by maybe 20,000 of her nest mates. Similarly, Trevor, just to the little emperor penguins, how they waddle around in a concentric circle, and they use the thermal heat of the mass, and those on the outside go in and vice versa, and they keep moving around, and they keep the queen warm. And of course, the reason they have the honey is so they have food all winter long.
Reese, I've got a text here from Luke in Warrnambool, who should be a writer. He says, "Hi, Trevor. Winter activity in the southwest of Victoria. Well, summer just doesn't have the 6 to 7 metre swell required to wrap themselves around a black-nosed point break in Portland, making the point only peel like a ripe Innisfail banana all the way into the second section, which opens up scrumptious barrels that spits like an angry alpaca, then just keeps on going," says Luke. You should be a creative writer, Luke.
Nice.
That explains that wave absolutely perfectly. "Hi, Trevor. I live on the south coast. I live on the Sunshine Coast, so in wintertime we can go for bushwalks in shorts and T-shirts and still be comfortable." Oh, isn't that just the case? "And I walk at 5 a.m. each morning. Love the stars in winter, the singing of the birds in summer. My backyard includes natural bush and a creek. I have sunbirds and finches nesting on my veranda. I feed magpies and kookaburras. The beach at sunrise is often stunning," says Faye from Yeppoon.
Oh, that's heaven.
Isn't it really?
Oh, yeah.
But now, I like to when I go and do my walking, Reese, I like to do it in bare feet, because I think that keeps you in touch with nature. It doesn't necessarily make it as good in winter, but as long as your toes don't go purple or blue, I still think it's okay.
Yeah, I think it's outstanding. It connects us, as a matter of fact, with the Earth's natural vibrational energy. They call it, some people call it earthing. There's no question that we all need to be barefoot more often, walking on a beach, in a forest, in your backyard, anywhere where you can actually connect with our mother, nature.
I had somebody walk past me and go, "Gee," like the other day when I was going for a walk, and someone walked past me because I had bare feet, and he said, "Geez, you're brave in bare feet." And I looked at him, and he was in shorts.
bit of the pot calling the kettle the name, I reckon.
I'd say so. Hello, Annie.
Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Yes, Annie.
That's good. I've got two things. Hmm. When the summer, I used to like the smell of somebody after they made their lawn.
I love that smell of summer.
And it looked like a boogie table was set so well done.
Yep.
And number two is winter time. Nana and I used to love listening to the rain on the roof. And it's a lot of musical instruments playing.
It's a beautiful sound.
Oh, it put you to sleep, and the thunder was so beautiful because you knew you were safe in your house.
I'm glad you mentioned storms too, Annie. Thank you. When you get those storms coming through, Reece, and this can be on the coast or it can be anywhere, and watching storms approach is absolutely beautiful. I know that it can be terrifying and I know that the results can be horrific, but watching storms come in are pretty amazing.
It is, Trevor. And, you know, I just want to share, I just came to my mind, you know, here's how beautiful, really how exquisite our world is, the animal kingdom. Did you know, for instance, our friends, the doctors of the sea, the sharks, did you know that sharks are able to detect when a cyclone is approaching and they leave the area after the cyclone passes through? They come back. Everything is in sync, really. And you know yourself, when you go bush or when you go into the water, you, by almost osmosis, as it were, you become one with nature and the forces. It's very humbling.
It is. It's nice to be part of. When you watch a dust storm come in central Australia across the deserts, you can see them coming for miles, and the effect that they have on the environment is huge. But dust storms are beautiful to watch too.
Yeah, dust devils and they look like mini tornadoes, really, and they mimic it. And it's incredible when you think of it, how the animals have to prepare and where they go and what they do to literally hunker down so that we all know in these dust storms, you have a hard time breathing for a good reason. And what do the animals do? Nature is this incredible puzzle, right? And if you're fortunate, you get to flip a few pieces and then you flip the piece and you try and fit it into where it belongs. But it's this never-ending puzzle. It's so glorious.
We chase the sun, living in beautiful Busselton. We don't need to go anywhere in summer, but in winter we like to head north, road tripping all over. We especially love exploring small towns in remote areas. It's a gorgeous country that we live in, says Mel. That's true. Lord Howe Island can be distressing because there's no internet, no mobile phone coverage and no television, but can feed the fish at Ned's Beach, says Lindsay in Goulburn. Good morning, John.
Just listen to you saying about Mother Nature. I've been a rock fisherman for nearly 40 years, and there's nothing like being on the rocks near the ocean fishing. It's amazing what you see, and just love that natural feeling.
When you're rock fishing, we won't go because there are a whole lot of political things about the safety in rock fishing and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But there is no better place than to experience I'm going to say awe, because I reckon it is the sheer awe of the ocean, than on rocks, because that's where it hits hard.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm a avid surfer as well, and it helps understanding waves and how they can back up with each other and you know, get you into all sorts of trouble. But it's the things you see, like whales and dolphins, and I've seen some massive kingfish that you'd never land, you know, just cruise past. Yeah, it's a wonderful feeling.
What is it that attracts rock fishermen, John? Because they're a certain breed.
Yeah, we are. I don't know. I think it's a challenge because it's not just, you know, pull up, drop your line and see what you catch. You actually got to go to the fish. And, you know, sometimes you're in areas that no one else has even walked on.
But it is a real wanting to be... I'm not sort of wanting to sound too airy-fairy, but it is a real closeness to nature more than any other form of fishing. I know that on boats it can be as well, but not so much as with rock fishing.
Oh, absolutely. Like, some of the areas you go to, you can feel that you've you're probably the only person that's ever been there.
Do you care if you catch fish?
As long as I get a feed. Once I get a feed, I'll let everything else go.
But you just enjoy just being out there, and if you don't catch any fish, then you'll go, oh, okay, that's the way it goes, but you're quite happy to be out there?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I've been up at our head, and, you know, you'll run into kangaroos and emus and all sorts of things while you're trying to get to where you want to fish.
Do you wear a vest?
I do now. I never used to. I've never been in, but I've rescued a couple of guys that have.
Good to hear. Hey, thank you, John.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye.
That's when you're right at the coalface, so to speak, Reese.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, anything can happen. Rogue swell. If you're not ready for it, can take you down. And if you're by yourself, that's one of the delights, but it's also one of the challenges. Your senses are peaked, and you're right there with her.
That's one of the great things, though, isn't it? Your senses being peaked, and that's one of the wonderful things about being out in nature, is that it peaks your senses, whether or not it's invigorating or challenging or even a bit frightening, but your senses are peaked in a whole lot of different ways.
Yeah. I mean, most of us, to some degree, have the capacity for thrill-seeking. Some people are serious thrill-seekers and jump out of airplanes at unbelievable heights, but we all like to see something different. And that's the thing, Trevor. Wherever you go into nature, whenever you go into nature, you're guaranteed to see, if you're looking or hear or feel, something new. And you're like a great detective, and it is exhilarating. And we do need that exhilaration away from being electronically stimulated, in most cases, overstimmed. And here's the other thing.
Yeah.
When you go near big trees in a beautiful stand, they're actually giving off some of the most powerful medicine from their leaves. And when we breathe that for 15, 20 minutes, it jacks up the cells in our blood called natural killer cells. Those natural killer cells can be boosted by as much as 40%. That means your body is 40% stronger to fend off any cancers or any other diseases. It's free. It's free. All you got to do is you got to make the effort to go next to the big trees and breathe, look around, and also don't forget to take your camera, because you can get some incredible shots, and they're one in a lifetime shots.
You could also hug that tree if you wanted to.
Oh yeah, I do.
Then you could be a big tree hugger.
I am.
Morning, Tim.
Yeah, well, that's just what I started thinking. I thought back to when you'd hug trees and it felt so good, but then now that's why. Yeah, all right.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, no, just so many. I love it so much when Reese comes on, and I was only thinking earlier, when's he come back on?
Oh, he's back. He's
so
got...
I must have been feeling it, but... Oh, I was wondering whether you live in Australia or live overseas, or you're over here. You live in Canada?
Oh, I go back and forth.
Right. But, yeah, no, many, I love winter because there's no flies and you're not likely to get burnt. You can't get burnt in the southern states of Australia, so that's a relief from the... So having all this beautiful nature around, we have an anxiety season when it can burn, when it's dry, But back on a farm a few years ago, we went organic, and I thought, one night it was foggy, and I thought, this is a bit boring, this long winter autumn evening. I'll go out for a walk across the paddocks, and I'd just got a new rechargeable torch. I was walking across, and we'd gone organic about 2 years, and these cow turds, I was looking at the ground, and there were all these worms with their bums on the edge of the old cow patch about 2 weeks ago, and they were stretching towards the edge, the middle of the, and they were just eating the cow turds, the old dry turds, which I'd never seen that before, and because now the dung beetles do that job, but back in those days, but yeah, we'd gone organic, and there were just all these Yeah, living on the farm, and there's just nature next to you all the time. It's just wonderful getting out there and appreciating. And it starts with the tiny little weedy microbes, you know, because I've done biodynamics a fair while, and that just doing that just helps your land as well.
Isn't that that whole idea of just being observant, Tim, and that going for a walk and having a look around you, you'll discover things that you didn't know?
Yeah, if you stop and take the time and you sit somewhere, nature will turn it on for you. Things will appear. And if you love nature, I mean, if you love the big tall trees near your place, they'll stand up longer and things like that. And, yeah.
Good on you. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you. Bye.
You just got to have a look, Rhys.
Yeah, Tim's spot on. If you just sit down anywhere, take 5 whole minutes and don't move and look around. You'll be blown away with what you actually see. The other thing, an organic, biodynamic lover of nature, Tim was spot on. There is no waste in nature. And when you think about it, Trevor, it is the most flawless blueprint that 7.6 billion procreating humans need to gravitate toward that flawlessness very quickly. We're swimming, as we know, in trash, and we don't really need to be. We can repurpose it, and it's very exciting. And you get inspired when you go for these walks, and you get new thoughts.
I've got a text here that says, hi, Trev, you should try walking around Uluru in summer or winter in barefoot. That's a really good experience.
I bet.
Another one that says, there is a pleasure in the pathless woods. There's a rapture in the lonely shore. There is society where no one intrudes by the deep sea and the music as it soars. I love that, Mona. Look, there's a whole text, but thank you, Eunice, with those expressions, because what it does is really just points out what is so great about going out there. And pathless woods, I guess, finding your own journey, Rhys.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, and look, our lives are filled with habits. So why not consider making it a habit in every season, wherever you can, to have a look around. And Tim reminded me here now on this half of the world, it's very, very hot. We have these new wretched prolonged heat waves. So it's the autumn and the winter are becoming the new time period for people to spend a little bit more time in the great outdoors, because you can. The heat and you don't get fried from the sun and the firestorms, Trevor.
Eunice, actually, that piece that Eunice wrote, I won't read it all out, Eunice, because it's a bit long, but it finishes with, from all I may be or I have been before, to mingle with the universe and feel what I can never express yet cannot all conceal. It's a Lord Byron piece. And that's the thing. There must be something truly wonderful about it all, Rhys, because there's been so much written about experiences in the wild and being part of it.
Yeah, and when you think a couple of hundred years or 150 years ago, when they didn't have any of the amenities that we take for granted, wow, were they ever poetic? One of my faves is John Muir. He was the co-founder of the Sierra Club, and he saved his dogged work saved the mountain sequoias. They were being dropped and just left on the ground. These are the largest single-stemmed mountain trees in the world, and he protected some 70-plus groves along the western face of the Sierra Nevada here in Cali. It's just wonderful. All his works are glorious, and it's just, you read it, and then you just want to be there. It's a great positive feedback loop.
You know, my favorite book about looking after the environment was a Suzuki book, which was a book called Wisdom of the Elders,
mm-hmm.
and really took a look at Indigenous cultures and Indigenous society and how they treat the earth and how we can learn from that. And it's a brilliant book from David Suzuki. I read it years ago, and it's an absolute cracker. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Helen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you both?
We're going pretty well, Helen.
What a beautiful topic.
What did you want to add to it?
One of my favourite walks is the short walk into town, the shortcut into town, where I can see beautiful treed hills that when I look at them, they lift my spirits. And then there's a paddock of horses that are very sociable. And then I walk near a river that's got beautiful weeping willows that I've loved from a child. And it just lifts my spirit, that walk.
Why is it important to you, Helen?
I've loved the hills from when I was about 10 years old, and my father used to take us up here on weekends. And,
yeah.
And it just helps me feel part of a oneness with the universe, and it just lifts my spirits. It makes me feel very happy.
And we need that, don't we?
Yeah.
We need to have our spirits lifted every now and then.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I read a book from the library, I borrowed from the library on Cordman Summit's Best Friend, and it said when sunlight hits the skin, the body makes serotonin, which is a feel-good hormone, which turns into melatonin, which is one that helps you sleep. So I try and get a bit of sun when I can.
That is such an important point. And Helen, there's also that's been proven that there's the winter blues where people feel down in winter. So probably maybe the best way to deal with that is to actually get out.
I think it's one of the advantages of not having a car.
Yeah, it's true too. The advantage of not having a car, Reece, is you get to walk.
Yeah, or get on a push bike or just get amongst it. You mentioned a very interesting point. That is, we do need, all of us do need a certain amount of sunlight, and it can be filtered light, particularly, Trevor, children. What's happened in Asia is really rather remarkable. The incidence of being short-sighted has literally skyrocketed almost to beyond 95% for every child. My colleagues sleuthed around. They found that instead of the kids spending lunch hour maybe outside or after school outside, the pressures that they all, the little ones, are all faced with to get tutors and to have a little kip during lunch break as opposed to muck around in the playground has caused their eyeballs to become oval rather than circular because they're not getting the stimulation of the oxytocin in the brain from the sunlight. How's that?
And that's a reason why we should all be out there, and not only for kids, but it's also, but most kids want to be outside. I know that in Australia now, there are some schools that are putting as part of their curriculum, especially primary schools, time in the bush. And
yeah,
that has now become part of curriculum, that they get out of the classroom and they spend an afternoon out in the bush and they incorporate the curriculum as part of that.
Well, and exactly right, because the incidence of ADHD, that too has skyrocketed. When you take kids out of these artificial rooms with lighting, et cetera, and you get them in nature and you get them moving around as opposed to being sedentary, guess what happens? They have fun. When you have fun, you can learn anything. And by osmosis, you're in nature, they're breathing healthy, clean air, their heart rates are elevated, their stress hormone, cortisol, melts away, and it's a win-win-win.
A nice point from Rob, who says, "You fill up my senses like a night in the forest," says Bob. Bob Denver.
Nice.
I love that, Lou. We'll play Annie's song in just a little while, where that's from.
That's our late friend John Denver.
In winter,
he's
I plant.
Wonderful lover of nature.
And wasn't he? What? In winter, I plant trees. It's the best time to plant them in my local environment. Another
good
person said, "I walk in the bush because it reconnects me, but also it means that I sometimes enjoy back going into the cities because absence makes the heart grow fonder as well." Maybe he doesn't like the bush. Hello, Pat.
Oh, hi, Trevor. Hi, Dr. Reece. I am a bush barefoot kid, having grown up, but as I've gotten older, I've become a fairly chronic asthmatic. But I'm fully endorsing your theory, but I'd like to know. Sometimes when I feel unable to do anything, I think I've got to get outside and care for on my property. I've turned it into what I think, when I'm properly caring for it, a lovely botanic garden type environment with lots of wonderful trees. And when I get out amongst them, I feel about 300% better.
Wow.
Why do you reckon, Pat?
Well, that's what I'm asking Dr. Reed. Is there any proven scientific or whatever theory behind what he's saying?
There's 50 years of research, actually, and here's where we are on our overcrowded hot earth. In the country of Japan, they discovered, this goes back 40 years ago, this is true, they discovered that people, Trevor, were being worked literally to death, and the incidence of shorter lifespans, as well as burnout, et cetera, and suicide were really a serious problem. So the government had many medicos work on what they can do. They discovered that when they take the workers and put them in a forest for a week or two, that it actually recharges their bodies. It melts away the stress, the cortisol. Their blood pressure, which is easily measured, also sinks down. And this is where these natural killer cells and the studies came from. It boosts the natural killer cells in a human body by 40%. That means that they can fend off cancer 40% stronger than the burnt-out city workers. So when you do go into, if you're fortunate enough to have a garden, botanical garden, and you can be amongst the trees, they are actually giving you medicine. All you have to do is be there to breathe it. I mean, how good is that? And we encourage everyone, all listeners, please, if you've got a yard, plant at least two food-bearing trees, because obviously of the food, it gives you and your family and your neighbors an extended family, but it provides safe habitat for our friends, the bees. One caveat, please, no chemicals.
Pat, thank you. Reese, is that the tree environment, or is it the de-stress environment that gives you the ability to be able to fight those things? And that it could be that you go to the ocean, it could be you go to the trees, it could be you go to the desert, that it's the de-stressing that is the important part, not necessarily a forest.
Well, a bit of both, but the chemicals that come off the leaves, the volatile organic compounds, we measure those. The terpenes and all of the long chain, beautiful molecules. And they're termed collectively phytoncides. And so, yes, we can, when you measure the level of these beautiful chemicals in the forest, and then you measure the each patient, which the Japanese and now the South Koreans also have, there's a strong correlation. But you make a good point. If you don't live near a forest, or you can't get near a forest, if you live in a city, go into one of the big parks and just hang out around a big tree. That also helps us. But if you go, if you're a surfer like you are and many others, or a sailor like I am, just to be on the water also lowers our stress, not as much as being around trees, but it still resets our calibration and makes us feel good, Trevor. You know, the important thing is it's we're discovering everything comes from our brains. If we feel good, the rest of our body responds. If we're sad, if we're down, if we're depressed, you can have all kinds of other ailments because your brain isn't in that zone. So wherever you can, get to that zone and lift your brain up.
I got a great taxi that said, I saw a sign at a nursery that said the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, true.
Mark, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, Mark.
Yes, I've retired as a marine biology teacher, but I was born in Port Lincoln. Both my brother and I were born in Australia, but our parents immigrated out from war-torn Europe from Germany. And my father worked for the railways as a clerk and was promoted. And I was back in Adelaide at the age of five, but we forever went back to Port Lincoln. And I fell in love with the ocean because my godfather was a Russian immigrant, and he was one of the first spear fishermen in Port Lincoln, and made his own wetsuit out of the what do you call it, underneath the carpet, the underfelt.
Oh, the underlay.
Yeah, sewed it up himself. And I was eight on a Christmas holidays coming there, and he was out spearfishing. I couldn't swim, but he had a spare pair of goggles and snorkel. And he said, look, put these on and just hang on to my wetsuit. And the first time I put the goggles on, it was just, wow, have a look at the life that's underneath here. And that was my passion in order to go on and become a biology teacher.
Yeah.
Our first 3 years in New Zealand, I was of an era where we were halfway through and Goffey got the flick and we were looking at permanency, and then suddenly it was all contract teaching. So my first 3 years was teaching in Wellington, right at the bottom of Cook Strait, and a beautiful day in Wellington was just stunning. But also equally spectacular was the entrance into Cook Strait, where the ferry's going to Picton. It was so rough. We went down there, we rugged ourselves up, and we walked to the edge of the runway. And if you threw a stone up, you'd probably hit the plane. But then a ferry went through, and I could not believe why they even ventured out there. This thing was five stories high, and it was almost people on the top where the cafeteria was. We went a couple of weeks later, and the guy says, well, the crossing where we had to turn back, if the window was open, you could have touched the water.
You know, Mark, it's a bit of a cliche, but that old saying that to watch nature in all its glory, especially when it's at its most furious, is amazing.
Oh, hell, that was spectacular.
Hmm.
And yeah. There was a huge rock wall, and like the end of the Adelaide runway, and it was recessed. But they had a footpath. You know, and just the power of the waves, it was just amazing.
Mark, thank you. I've got to move on, but thank you very much. Rhys, there are so many places and so many opportunities to experience nature at any time of the year, and especially around winter. And the thing is, Rhys, we've got to get out and have a look.
Yeah, and you know the great thing, and I sing the praises everywhere in the world. Australians are hip. Australia gets it. Australians love to get amongst nature. And I tip me hat because the way we all are going to make it on our glorious globe is to love nature. And when you know something, you tend to protect it. And I can't tell you enough, and I'm going to give a shameless plug. I've got my 11th book called Love Nature is just come out. And if you like what we're talking of, there's 78 stories that I've written over the last 30 years. These are pure wonder stories. They're not the gory stuff that I got to report on every day for those who follow me. This is how awesome our planet is. And I encourage anyone and everyone who loves nature to pick up this my best book, the 11th book, Love Nature.
Excellent. And we know how much you love it, and there are plenty of people here who love you as well. I've got a text here that says that they've been trying to contact you by email. Is there a way that people can do that, Rhys?
Yeah, sure there is. My website, drrhese.com, drrhese.com, and there's a contact button and an email address there. Please, anybody send me an email, I'll personally respond to it.
drrhese.com.
Yes.
Beautiful work. Hey, Rhys, always good to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me. Cheers, mate.
Dr. Rhys Halter, who's very popular with our listeners. And that's because he has a true passion for the environment, which is a good thing.